Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In 1971, the United States came very close to ensuring access to universal child care. The bill would have created a national network of federally funded child care centers. The cost would have been subsidized depending on a family's income. Republicans and Democrats supported the bill, but President Richard Nixon vetoed it, calling it a communal approach to child rearing. Pat Buchanan, a young White House speechwriter at the time, says powerful conservatives said that the bill would be a government intrusion on the family. It was the first time the term family values was used to actually undermine families. Well, here we are 50 years later. And the child care crisis is as urgent as ever. Millions of parents cannot afford child care. And those providing child care, many have to rely on assistance because they're not paid a living wage. The cost of child care is one of the highest in a family's budget, according to Child Care Aware. In 28 states, 1 year of child care costs about $9,000 a year, but many parents spend far more. A new documentary, Through the Night, looks at this crisis through the lens of a 24/7 daycare center. Over two decades ago, Dolores and Patrick Hogan transformed their home into Dee's Tots, a 24/7 child care and community center in Rochelle, New York. They take care of babies to tweens. They provide sleepover care, books, toys, a disco for the kids, and so much more. It's a safe space for parents who have to work and pay the bills. And the majority of the parents are single moms of color. They work at CVS as overnight nurses, home health aides, and in janitorial services. Here is the trailer for the documentary Through the Night.
Get up. I've been doing this for 22 years.
I have all different types of family. I have some that comes in at 6 o'clock in the morning that works to 8:30 at night. I have some that comes from 3:30 to 12:30 at night. I have some that comes in overnight.
I see a lot of parents come in and break down.
They don't want to do this, but they need to work and take care of their family.
See you later. All right, baby, have a good day. Be careful.
This is the way the world is set up at this point.
I never really thought of overnight childcare till I had to use it.
I've been working 7 days, almost 2 months. If I'm not working one job, I'm working another job.
Hi, mommy.
Merry Christmas.
Love you guys very much.
It's not just a job. This is really our life.
My children, ever since they was the age of 2 years old,
they had to share me with other children. I remember my children saying, Mommy, why do they have to come first?
Mommy! As parents, you make sacrifices. It's not their fault. So I just do what I can.
And that is a trailer of Through the Night, and I hope you can take the time to watch this documentary and share it with friends. It really is an incredible documentary. You can find a link with more information at yourcallradio.org. Joining us now is Laura Limbaugh, director and producer of Through the Night. The documentary premiered at the 2020 Tribeca Film Festival after going through the Sundance Institute's 2019 Documentary Edit and Story Lab. Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for making this incredible, important documentary. Hi, do we have Laura? All right, we'll try to connect with Laura. Hopefully we have Dolores Nunu Hogan with us. Dolores is the co-founder and primary care provider at Dee's Tots in Rochelle, New York. It's the 24-hour daycare center featured in the film. Hi, Dolores, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And I wish I had you in studio because I would give you a huge hug. I just the work that you do is absolutely amazing. What was it like for you to have the crew in the daycare center, you know, filming just your everyday activity?
It was
we enjoyed it. I mean, they didn't interfere with anything, and we didn't have anything that we had to read or make up anything like that. It was just the actual daycare. And the children, they was just like, they was enjoying being on the cameras. And they showed the kids how to work the cameras and different stuff. So it was something that the kids enjoyed. So it was a pleasure. We really became family.
And what was it like when you first saw the film?
Oh, now that, seeing yourself on television is something different. It's like spectacular. You know, I never thought I would see anything like that, you know. So I was amazed and I was happy at the same time, because it was definitely showing the world what daycare providers go through and what the parents have to go through, and even what the kids go through throughout the day, you know? So
right.
I was absolutely amazed.
It almost felt like we had a camera just looking into an average day. I mean, it was amazing footage that, you know, most people just have no idea what goes on in a daycare center. And I also want to ask you, Dolores, I won't give everything away, but you did go through a few health issues during the film, and I just wonder how you're doing today.
Yeah, I did. I had a problem with my arm, my shoulder. I have a tear in my right arm shoulder. So I'm still working on that. I don't want to do surgery because, you know, it takes a long time to get back to normal. And then I end up getting sick with a situation in my, like a tumor in my head. Mm. And I'm just on medication for the rest of my life for that. But I'm here. I'm alive. I still can be with my children and my family. And I'm just happy. Mm. But it was in the beginning when it first happened, it was a terrible experience. I was scared. I really was.
I can't even imagine. I mean, you're not only with the pain of your arm, but then not being able to take care of those kids. It really came across that was just so hard for you.
It was, especially when I had to take a little time off to heal. And I would hear them downstairs playing, and I just couldn't do it. I had to come downstairs with mm-hmm. them because I missed all the, you know, actually they healed me, you know, with all the fun and the laughter. And I needed them. I just needed them to get me back.
And are you still operating under COVID?
Oh, yes. We never closed down.
Wow.
We lost like 50% of our children, but, we still operate because I work with the essential workers are still working. They're still out there in the field doing everything they have to do. The people that work in stores and my nurses and my male women and men. So, you know, they still out there have to do their job. So me and my husband were still operating, and we keep the doors open for them as long as we can keep it open. You know, they need help too.
Well, and a huge shout out to your husband, Patrick, because it was also amazing to see the incredible work he does and the connection he has with the children. I think we got our technical issues fixed, and I think we now have Laura Limbaugh with us. Laura, are you with us? Hello, do we have Laura? All right. Well, we will hopefully connect with Laura. Dolores, can you talk about, I mean, what's so amazing about the work that you do, you know, after 20 years of meeting these families, especially the single moms, what has this really revealed to you about the struggle facing working moms and the fact that wages just have not gone up at all over the past two decades?
It reveals to me that, politicians and things just don't care, you know, that it's okay for, you know, for the mothers to struggle and have to get three and four jobs to, you know, work like that and pay their bills, and their children, they're not watching their kids grow. They're watching their kids grow through my eyes and other people's eyes, you know. And same thing with the providers. They don't care anything about us. We, you know, we're still on minimum wage, you know, and working 11 hours before we even get overtime. So I just, it's a struggle. And I noticed that for the last 20, 30 years that women, And I have fathers here that's a single fathers also. They have to struggle to do what they have with their children, with the bills and all these different jobs they have to, you know, get to make ends meet. And they still don't have a penny in their pocket because, you know, we give food and stuff out. Me and my husband help with them with the Con Ed bill. We buy Christmas gifts. Holidays come up. You know, we're getting out, you know, dinners and stuff so they can have nice dinners and things. So it's a struggle. We're still struggling. And I really wish somebody would pay attention to what's going on, especially these people that's putting all these laws, these politicians that's putting all these laws down. Ask us what we need. Ask the providers and the parents. Put us at the table. Let us have a sit down with you at the table, and we can tell you what we need more than what you are telling us what we need.
Right.
We need fair wages. And you're fighting over $15. What is $15? We still can't even get $15. $15 is nothing compared to raising a family. And you're a politician, you coming in with, you making like maybe $5,000-$6,000 a week. And we are struggling trying to just put food on the table now.
It is such a good point when you think about the fact that the federal minimum wage has not moved in 10 years. And people have been fighting for 15 for many years, but in many parts of the country, that just doesn't cut it.
Right. It doesn't. Not, you know, it really don't. And especially when you're a parent with 2 and 3 kids. And some of my parents have 5 children and they're doing crazy work and, you know, and, but we just hope and pray that one of these days that we can come to that table and explain to them exactly what it is and what we need to be, to live in society.
Dolores, it is pretty amazing when you look at history. And I mentioned this in the intro that the United States came close to passing a universal child care bill in 1971, where you had Republicans and Democrats supporting this, but then in came the conservatives and they said it's an intrusion in the family, and Nixon vetoed it in 1971, and it has not come up again since.
Right. Well, thank God for Lorna. She brought it up again, and we're bringing it back to the world. That's why I was so glad when she called and asked me to come in. Can she come in and, you know, film the daycare? And it was great because I always prayed that we can find some kind of way that people can actually see what the daycare providers and what the parents go through. You know, some of these parents leave their kids, their babies at 6 weeks old. And I have to, you know, they're crying at the door, you know, they have to go back to work and they're at the door crying, you know, and I'm taking care of them and telling them it's going to be all right. I promise you that I'm going to love them just the way you are. I can't be mommy, but I can be close to it. And then once they, you know, realize that, okay, you know, they're in a pretty good position. I'm all right. I can go to work and my child is safe. And that's all they're looking for, a safe environment and a loving environment for their children. But it's hard. It's hard. It brings tears to my eyes sometimes. It's just hard.
Especially the parents who work the overnight shift because they don't want to leave their kids at someone else's home to spend the night. And then they are home for their kids during the day, but they're absolutely exhausted.
Yeah. I have a nurse, Shanona. She's that way. She's I started taking care of her daughter when she was 3 months old. She's 10 now. And her son, when he was 3 months and he's 7 now. And she's like, we had a conversation and she's like, wait, when she turns 12, 13, I still would have to bring her to daycare because I'm an overnight parent. I said, yeah, you're still going to have to bring her to daycare. And it just dawned on her, I can't believe that she might be in this for another 5, 6 years doing daycare. And it's not me, the daycare itself. It's just she's working overnight and she have to come home in the morning and take care of the children. And she's exhausted. Sometimes when she come in, she's so tired. I don't know. I take my hat off to her. She's a fantastic person. I love her.
Wow. Well, we're going to play a clip of Shanona in a little bit, but it really was amazing to learn more about her story and so many others like her. That is Dolores Nunu Hogan, co-founder and primary care provider at Dees Tots Childcare in New Rochelle, New York, the 24-hour daycare center featured in the film Through the Night. And now I would like to welcome Laura Limbaugh to the show. Laura is director and producer of Through the Night. Hi, Laura. Sorry about the technical issues.
Oh, no worries, yes. And it's Loida.
Loida,
thank you.
Thank you
so much for having
me. Thank you, Loida. You know, this film was just really incredible. It's one thing to read about the childcare crisis, but to see the struggles, the love, and everything in between is just another experience altogether. When did you first learn about Dees Tots Childcare?
Well, yes, thank you for having me and for the kind words about the film. I learned about Dees Tots about 6 years ago, I would say, through an article that I read that was really focused on looking at the fact that in the United States, people increasingly have to work more than one job to make ends meet, or that, you know, people are working overnight shifts, irregular schedules, and posing the question of, given that reality, who then looks after people's children? And the article shared a bit about Nunu and Patrick, who are featured in the film, as well as some of the parents who rely on their daycare. And so in reading the article, I was, just really taken in because it made me immediately think about my own mother's experience raising us. I'm the oldest of four children, and my mother raised us in New York City, working as a home health aide and working the night shift, you know, and making minimum wage. So it was just, you know, it was sort of, you know, the experience of reading an article about people that, you know, I didn't necessarily know at the time, but that felt so familiar, and reading stories that felt so familiar to my own mother's and my experience as a child. And then as a filmmaker, you know, the subsequent thought was this would be a really amazing and important story to tell.
It was an important, such an amazing story to tell. And we were just talking about where we are in this country, looking back at the history of the United States almost passing a universal child care bill, which would have created a network of federally funded child care centers. So the cost would have been subsidized depending on a family's income. But Nixon vetoed this because of, you know, conservative arguments about government intrusion on the family, which is really amazing. And here we are. I mean, wages are stagnant. Childcare is expensive. And as we meet in the film, you know, some moms and some dads are working multiple jobs, three jobs, and they still can't afford basic childcare. What was it like for you just to learn about these struggles so closely?
In many ways, it wasn't a learning experience for me because, as I mentioned, you know, I did grow up in a home where this was the constant struggle. I'm the oldest of the four. Mm-hmm. And so at a very young age, I became my mother's right hand, in terms of everything, you know, in the household. So it was more of an experience of, feeling affirmation of, you know, an understanding that things are this hard because our system is cruel and inhumane and actually really just downright violent, and that the challenges that the families in the film, like my own mother and so many other folks in my community, face are not due to any personal shortcomings or failures. The challenges are due to these structural issues. You know, we live in a system that has normalized this reality of people working multiple jobs and still having to choose between paying rent or, you know, groceries on any given month, or just even the fact that we are at this point where sleep is a luxury. So many working folks are not able to sleep because they have to work so much, you know, to provide and to take care of their families. That's perverse. And my hope, you know, is that we sort of start to call this what it is, perverse and cruel and inhumane, to counter the normalization of this. You know, this is not a new reality. This has been the reality for decades and decades and decades. It's been the reality whether we have Democrats in office or Republicans in office. So clearly, you know, for me, it's like we're not seeing the issue for what it is. We're not, you know, it's sort of like you can't fix what you can't face. You know, and if we don't actually diagnose the thing, you know, the illness accurately, we won't be able to solve for any of these issues, you know?
Right. Let's talk again about another story. We meet in the film Marisol Valencia, a single mom who works three jobs to make ends meet. She works at a bakery, she works at Food Town, and she's also a dental assistant. Can you tell us a little bit more about Marisol Dolores?
Marisol is like my daughter. When I met her, one of Patrick's cousins had sent her to daycare because she was working so many jobs and she was taking the children from daycare to daycare to daycare, and it just wasn't working. And she was so concerned about finding a daycare for her children that she can actually go to work and not worry. And Patrick's cousin sent her to my daycare, and we sat down and we had a long conversation. And Marisol is, to me, she is spectacular. She does so many things to try to keep, to make ends meet and to make sure her daughters are safe and loved. And she just, I wish I had the words that I could just tell you about her. All I can tell you that this is a wonderful woman, and she's a wonderful mother, and she's a loving person. Her heart is so big, and it's hard for her when she come home at night, sometime at 11 o'clock, you know, I cook dinner and I'll have her something here to eat, and we'll sit down and we'll talk, and, you know, and she talks about her day and stuff like that. Even her love life, she don't have a love life. She has nothing but work and taking the kids home. And I worry about her when she picks the kids up and have to leave at 1 o'clock in the morning and take the kids home and take them in the house. I'm worried if anybody's gonna, you know, snatch her or do something to her and the kids. So, you know, I just pray for her that she one day will find a job that is just, I can get up at 7 in the morning, come home at 5:30 and be with her children instead of getting up at 4 in the morning and coming home at 11, 12 o'clock at night and never seeing them, taking them home, putting them to bed and starting all over again. But she's a trooper. She's out there. I'm telling you, she's a wonderful person.
Well, let's hear a clip. This is Marisol Valencia, a single mom who works three jobs to make ends meet. And this is a clip from the documentary Through the Night.
I never really thought of overnight childcare till I had to use it.
You mean where I am?
Yeah.
Oh, and I could have been over there?
I've been working 7 days for almost 2 months. I'm very tired. If I'm not working one job, I'm working another job. I'm always working. And working, it's nonstop. I asked if they would give me more hours, and they told me no. The maximum hours is 29 hours. And so why? Why? It's like, we cannot afford to pay you health insurance. I wanna have one job, I could spend time with my kids, have a house. That's my goal. But it's very hard with my kids because I don't get out until like 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock. If I wouldn't have Nuno, I don't know what would I do.
And that is Marisol Valencia. It's a clip from Through the Night, a documentary looking at the childcare crisis in this country through the lens of a 24/7 daycare center. Lura, what's amazing about Marisol is she's trying to get a full-time job, and how ironic is it that she applies at a daycare center and they offer her a full-time job at $11.50 an hour?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, in many ways, you know, obviously the film is about these tots and childcare providers at the heart of it. But I think that the film really does speak to just how many systems are, I wouldn't even say broken, you know, because at this point, I don't know a time where these systems ever actually worked in the United States. But just, again, back to the use the word of cruel, how many systems are cruel in our society, right? Because we're talking about, this is a matter of living wages, right? It's a matter of health care. It's a matter of child care. It's a matter of, you know, the society providing a safety net for working people, and the fact that the United States refuses to do so. You know, I think that's in many ways what Marisol's story speaks to so well, that she is stuck in this impossible cycle where she cannot get a job that will pay her a living wage, and then no one wants to hire her full time so that they don't have to pay health insurance or any other benefits. You know, and again, this is how our economy is structured. And in this moment, you know, this pandemic moment, we're seeing just how many of these people who do this work that is the work that actually is most essential, mm-hmm. You know, when all else fails, are being treated this way. You know, so in many ways, we are just abusing the people that we depend on the most. These are our essential workers. You know, they are Marisol. Marisol is an essential worker. She has been working 6-7 days a week throughout the entire pandemic. And, you know, one of her jobs is working at a supermarket, for a supermarket supplier. So she's, you know, out there making sure that our supermarket shelves are stocked, and that we all have, you know, enough toilet paper to binge on, right? And I say that with the utmost sarcasm, because here we are 10 months into this thing, having asked essential workers to sacrifice themselves and having provided nothing in return.
Right. We also learn in the film, Marisol says that the government will not help pay for daycare after a child is 13. And one of her children just turned 13. And she said, I cannot have my daughter home by myself. So mm-hmm. is that the cutoff, Dolores, that once your child turns 13, you can no longer get any help from the government?
That's the cutoff. When they turn 13, it doesn't matter. The government just put them out there to fend for themselves.
Wow. So what happened with Marisol and Diana?
Well, what happened is that me and Patrick, we still take care of her. Now we, she's one of our teachers here.
Aww.
She's our junior teacher. And so she comes in, and when she's here, she helps the kids because we do Zoom. So she's helping the kids when she finished her Zoom with their homework, and she helped us, you know, do lunch and dinner and different stuff with the kids. And, you know, she's... We just hired her, basically. She's our junior teacher.
Mm. Wow, that's
just because I don't want her in the house by herself, and I know what her mother is feeling.
Right.
And I just want her to be safe. I don't want nothing to happen to her. Mm. So if I have to put on my in my center that she's a junior teacher, then that's what I'll do, because I want her safe.
That is Dolores Nunu-Hogan, co-founder and primary care provider at Dees Tots Child Care in New Rochelle, New York, a 24-hour daycare center featured in the documentary Through the Night. We're also joined by Lura Limbaugh, director and producer of Through the Night. It premiered at the 2020 Tribeca Film Festival. And I hope you can take the time to watch this important documentary. You can find the link at yourcallradio.org. We're going to take a quick break. This is Your Call. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are talking about a new documentary, Through the Night, that follows three working moms whose lives intersect at a 24-hour daycare center. It really just exposes the childcare crisis in this country. So many single moms and dads are working multiple jobs and cannot make ends meet. If you have a story to share or a question or comment for our guests, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet at yourcallradio. Today we're joined by Dolores Nunu Hogan, co-founder and primary care provider at Dees Tots Childcare in New Rochelle, New York. It's the 24-hour daycare center featured in Through the Night. And Luda Limbaugh is director and producer of the documentary Through the Night. You can learn more about her work at yourcallradio.org. Dolores, it was also interesting to learn about how you actually got into doing this kind of work. Can you just quickly tell us that story before you got into daycare? You were a stay-at-home mom, and then one of your husband's friends got into a car accident and asked you if you'd watch her son all day and all night until she got home from the hospital.
Yes. My children's godfather, girlfriend, got into a bad car accident where she was in the hospital for a few months. It was a really bad accident. And he came and asked me, will I watch her 2-year-old son? And I, you know, I'm home, you know, and it's always at my house anyway. So I was like, sure, I would love it. It's not a problem. And once she came home from the hospital, she actually had another daycare provider at the time, but she loved the way I took care of her son as if he was my own child. And I had him day and night. So she took him away from the other daycare provider and gave him to me. And it wasn't that I was looking for a job or anything. But once she said, you know, you should be a provider. You should take care of people's children. That's what that's your calling. And I was like, you know what? Maybe that's what I'll do. And then from that day forward, that's what I started doing. People just started knocking on my door. And I lived in a basement apartment at the time. I won't forget that. And people were just knocking on my door looking for childcare. And that's exactly what I did. That's why I started from a basement apartment and worked my way up to a 3-bedroom apartment. And then later on, me and my husband was able to afford a house. And here we are.
You know, I was thinking about just caregivers in general. And over the past few years, we've heard so much about teachers and how they struggle and what their day is like and how hard it is for them making ends meet, having to spend their own money on school supplies, so many things. But we haven't really had that conversation about childcare providers and what your average day like, whether it's, you know, out of 15 kids, there's one child who maybe is having a really bad day and you pull that child aside and give them so much attention to the disco party that you have at night. I mean, it is nonstop work, Dolores. Can you just tell us about what actually goes into the work that you and your husband and your family really do on a daily basis?
Well, first of all, I have to say love goes into it. Mm. We give a lot of ourselves for the parents and the children. And not that the children don't deserve it. It's a lot of love. And we're always working with the children. And we treat the children like they're ours. We know we're not just providers. We don't look at ourselves as child care provider. You drop your child off and you bring them back the next day and that's it. When you bring your child into my home, you bring your child into their grandparents' house. That's what me and my husband and my family become. You become a part of their family. My daughter is called Titi. My husband is called Pop Pop. So we're not just providers, and we don't just provide care. We provide love and definitely a lot of understanding, because a lot of children come here with things going on. And it's hard for them, you know, having their mom work all day and night. They ask questions like, when is mommy coming home and different stuff. So, you know, we have to make sure that they get a lot of attention and a lot of love so that they will understand why their mommy have to work late like that all the time. And daddy have to come in late, drop them off early in the morning before the sunrise. They're in the daycare. So most of all, we put a lot of love involved in it, and I enjoy it. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think I'd be doing daycare until I'm 110 years old. God let me live that long.
Well, and when you think about what has happened under COVID, Laura, so many child care centers have closed permanently. And then, of course, there's just a lack of affordable options.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, the issue with, I think, child care, as you were talking about caregivers, you know, I think the work of people like Nuno and Patrick has largely gone unseen in our sort of popular culture and conversations about children and families. But I think that also applies to folks that work in nursing homes, you know, or home health aides. There is caregiving is it's truly a universal need, but it's work that is so undervalued and so underpaid in the U.S. And it becomes kind of invisibilized. So we don't see the work, we don't see the people, we don't fully understand what goes into it, and then we don't take care of the people that do this work. Which is the irony of it all is that these are the folks that care for the people that we say we love the most, right? They care for our children, or they care for our elderly, and we don't take care of them.
Well, let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Lisa in San Francisco. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Yes, I wanted to say that my mother, Juanita Riloff, she was a Chilean immigrant, and in New York City when I was growing up, she had a daycare center, a community-controlled daycare center, in the Lower East Side. And it was also like a respite center before respite centers even started. It was where, you know, some of the children would stay up to even 3 days with them if their parents were going through some serious issues during the time. During that time, there was, you know, of course, a lot of issues regarding daycare cuts as well. Mm-hmm. We also went to Washington, D.C. with a whole group of kids. She took us down there to protest against the cuts in daycare and protest the Vietnam War. And, you know, all their parents all came with us. And it was a very beautiful time to be part of that in 1968 to 1971. She was involved in that. Wow. She also had a daycare center here in San Francisco in the 80s as well.
Well, thank you for calling in with that story, Lisa. I mean, what we see in Through the Night is Nunu and her family having a huge bag of food and toys, packages at Christmas, so no one goes without. I mean, they have graduation ceremonies. They have parties. I mean, it's such an integral part of the community. Dolores Nunu Hogan is co-founder and primary care provider at Dee's Tots Childcare in New Rochelle, New York, the 24-hour daycare center featured in the documentary Through the Night. Laura Limbaugh is director and producer of the documentary Through the Night. And now I would like to welcome Gina Frommer to the show. Gina is CEO of Children's Council of San Francisco, a nonprofit advocacy group for childcare. Gina has over 4 decades of experience in youth and family services. Hi, Gina. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, Gina, this is not rocket science. I mean, we know what we need to do on this. We were just talking earlier about the bill that almost passed in 1971. What is it going to take to get some kind of universal child care? I remember when Hillary Clinton was running for president, we had a guest on the show who said she's got one of the best child care packages, and she's going to implement this on day one, but it hardly got any media attention. And then we look at Biden, and so far we're learning that he's going to expand the child care tax credit. He wants to raise that to 50%, up to a total of $4,000 for one child or $8,000 for two or more children. I mean, what is it going to take, though, to get to the point of having universal child care?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on. I cannot not say this. The movie was fantastic. It was about real stories and real people, and on both sides, from the side of the provider and side of families. Thank you for bringing that movie forward. You know, I hear about 50 years from that first initial push, right? And here we are 50 years later, and Biden, you know, we're cautiously optimistic about this federal plan for ECE from the Biden administration, $50 million. You're talking about $1 million a year investment since that first 50 years ago. And it's just not enough, right? You know, we keep meal piecing this universal need that impacts women and low-income families more than any other family in this country. And we here we are again, 50 years later, talking about the same issue without a true strategy for engaging this. And it's just not a woman's problem. In the movie, I saw, you know, it's Patrick, I believe, just as connected to the kids and working to support these families as Nunu, right? It's a family issue, this crisis that we're in. And, you know, $25 billion for childcare providers in this new plan in danger, you know, the families, providers in danger of closing due to COVID. $15 billion more in additional CC, DBG dollars, block grants for childcare industry. It's just not enough. And we keep meal piecing it. And so I hear the frustration from our families all the time. You know, I know California seems to be ahead of the game, you know, with Gavin Newsom, our governor, putting forth another plan. But again, it's like putting pieces in a puzzle that still has a lot of openings. And we need to attack this like many other countries are attacking this as a universal strategy for families, so they are not spending 28% of their income on childcare. Mm.
Dolores, given that you have so much experience doing this work, what are some of the changes that you would like to see? The changes that would help families and help your family?
Well, I would definitely like to see politicians and everything start giving up more money for the families, for the mothers and things, where they are, okay, what happens if a mother is making too much money, they totally kick her off. Mm. They don't even give her a chance to save anything or anything. If she's making a penny over what she's supposed to be making, they would kick her off. Marisol, right now, she's about to get kicked off because she got another job. They're about to kick her to the curb, and it's just still not enough to pay childcare, her rent, and everything. And she's trying to pay for one daughter, a daughter by herself. And then if me and my husband, try to interfere, like I say, well, you can come for free. And if I say that, and if the childcare, if the childcare the subsidies get involved with it and find out, it will make all my kids come for free. So I can't, it's so hard to try to help when you have to fight to do that. I don't seem to understand why we have to fight to, this is my daycare. If I have somebody that, you know, can't really afford it, if I want to cut them down to maybe $50 or whatever they can afford, like give them a scholarship, then they're going to tell me, oh, you gave that child a scholarship. So we're just going to pay you just $50 for every child that comes through your door. And it's hard for us. It's what I would like to see them do is work with us. Work with us. Come to the parent, come to the provider, see exactly what we need. Work with us. Give these parents more money. Give the providers more money. Because we are buying Pampers. We're buying milk. We're giving out food. We're taking care of children. When the some kids come in the morning, they haven't had breakfast, or they come in the afternoon, they even had dinner because they don't have it in their house. So they come here and they eat, which I don't mind, but we need the resource to continue to do that. And stop trying to make us not help people, because that's exactly what you're doing. You're making us not help or tell a lie about things. And I don't like doing that. Because I'm going to help my parents.
What can you tell us what the cap is? Do you know, Dolores, if a parent makes a certain amount, then they can no longer get help?
OK, okay, let's say Marisol, she makes 47. That's the cap. If she makes 47,000, that's the cap. Can't make no more after that. And you got to remember, daycare is $280 or $278. It depends on how old the child is. And per child a week. And then you still talk about her rent. But it's $47,000 per year after that for two children. And then you can't be on daycare anymore.
Mm. Gina, what is the deal with these numbers? These arbitrary numbers really affect, and in many cases, just have, I don't want to put words in people's mouth, say ruin their lives, but why? What's with these numbers? What can be done to change this?
I mean, these are federal guidelines in most cases that are carried out through states. The federal government needs to up these numbers. You know, San Francisco is one of the most expensive places to live. And if a family makes over $76,000, they get kicked off of support. And we know that in San Francisco, it's 138,000 or so is low income. So what are we saying?
Wow.
We need families to stay in poverty. You know, if you make a dollar more, keep this low income job. You know, the system is not set up for success. And I think at the federal level, these numbers need to be looked at. Federal, the low income minimum wage, to how people qualify. And why should families fall off a cliff? 47,000, are you kidding? If you make 848, you fall off a cliff. There should be supports between 48,000 and 100. There should be still some level of support for families as they ease out of poverty. This is about poverty alleviation and getting families from one place to the next. And these systems are keeping families in this bracket. Now, that can't be fair and it can't be right. And, you know, if we're ever going to move children who are 11 million children in this country in poverty out of that structure, we need to help families and change these numbers, these federal guidelines, so they can make more money. It's just tragic you know, how these numbers are keeping families in poverty.
And this goes back to what you said earlier, Luda, that this is just a vicious cycle. It just keeps people stuck, and it's so hard to get out of this. Based on the people that you've interviewed, the reaction that you've received from this documentary Through the Night, what are you hearing about what it will take to drastically change the system, specifically on this issue?
I would echo, you know, everything that both Nunu and the other guests have said. I'm sorry, I didn't hear your name at the top.
It's Gina.
Gina, yes. So obviously I would echo all of that. You know, I also heard something recently that I think is helpful in terms of just shifting our understanding about these issues, which was, you know, the fact that child care needs to be treated as a public good, the same way that, you know, K through 12 education is seen as a public good, or, you know, the post office or anything else, right, that we all rely on, that, and it needs to be invested in that way, as opposed to the what we have now, which is a system that basically says everybody's on their own, you know, and you have this kind of patchwork of small businesses, you know, small businesses who themselves are already making, you know, operating on very, really thin margins, because I think that's important to say that childcare is expensive for parents, but it's also not lucrative or, you know, well paid or appropriately paid for the providers either. And so, you know, you have folks that are essentially, you know, two sides of the same coin in some ways, right? And then you're leaving, you know, families to fend for themselves, literally, and everybody has to somehow patch it together. And that, you know, a patchwork system, as Gina said, is not, you know, it's not appropriate. And I think, you know, this also is really connected to who these issues disproportionately impact, you know, which is folks of color. It's Black folks, it's Latino folks, it's low-income, you know, folks, working-class folks that in the U.S., again, you know, there's just a real disregard and such a long history of violence, right, across the board and in all of the systems. And so, you know, and in this moment, so many other people now are impacted that, you know, this is kind of this eye-opening moment. And I think that's part of the reason that the film has garnered the sort of attention that it has, is because of the moment, you know. But I fear sometimes that if it weren't for this, the film may not have gotten the kind of attention that it has gotten, because again, we have normalized the fact that, you know, certain people are just supposed to, you know, this is the place, right, that certain people occupy in our society, and we're fine. Mm-hmm. We've normalized it. And so I think, in addition to the numbers and the policies and all of that, I think there's also like a need for expanding our imagination, you know, about what kind of future we want for ourselves, you know, and to be a little more radical in our demands and the things that we dream of, because this moment that we're living in is very radical, right? It's like all of the systems are collapsing, which to me just signals that our society and our systems have been really unsustainable. And so I think, you know, there's that. And I would also like to underscore what Nunu said about, you know, politicians needing to, and policymakers needing to work with providers and parents. I also think in general, as a society, we need to shift our understanding of what leadership looks like and who leaders are. Because, you know, as I hear Nunu talking about parents getting kicked off, you know, at 13, you know, from subsidies, and the ways in which she and Patrick will, you know, jump through hoops to figure out how to take care of their families. What I hear is two individual citizens deciding that they are going to take care, right, of their families and to provide this critical service, this safety net, you know, again, to use that word, an entire community for over two decades. And so they're here doing it while politicians are telling us after decades that it's impossible to do it.
Right. Well, and we're out of time. I'm sorry to have to cut you off, but it is a great point, and we will continue, as you say, to really demand more and to continue focusing on this really important issue. Luda Limbaugh is director and producer of the documentary Through the Night. Dolores Nunu Hogan is co-founder and primary care provider at Dee's Tots Childcare in New Rochelle, New York. And Gina Frommer is CEO of the Children's Council of San Francisco. Thank you so much for all of you for your great work. Thank you for joining us. And be sure to see Through the Night. You can find the information at yourcallradio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.